Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport. Offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Tonight on Capitol Report, we'll hear the latest on a slew of bills aimed at overhauling Florida's child welfare agency.
Back in the summer, we were all shocked and concerned about a rash of child abuse deaths. We have significant reforms that will improve the state and a community's ability to prevent future child deaths from child abuse.
Also this evening, keeping seniors safe in assisted living homes also comes up for legislative action in Tallahassee.
To clean up problems that have been identified in the press, and we're working real hard with the bill sponsors, and our goal is to get that passed this year.
We'll also learn why a congressional election in Southwest Florida is attracting so much national attention, and find out why water matters so much to average Floridians and members of the state legislature. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the 2014 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. The Florida Senate has now put together several proposals aimed at overhauling Florida's child welfare agency. As Sasha Cordner reports, the goal is to address the spate of child deaths taking place under the watch of the Florida Department of Children and Families.
The bill makes several changes to DCF. They include creating a criminal offense for abandoning a child, seeking to improve child abuse investigators' qualifications, and making sure most new employees hired after January 1st of next year hold a degree in social work. And Hollywood Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel says they're common sense changes.
Child abuse is primarily a social problem. We send a firefighter to fight fires. We need to send a social worker to do social work.
The bill also directs the DCF secretary to appoint an assistant secretary of child welfare who would manage child protection welfare services, and that person's qualifications are also outlined. Venice Republican Senator Nancy Dietert offered an amendment that states the person must either have a social work background or at least 7 years of experience in child welfare services.
The fact that we're going to call for the social worker degrees excludes many qualified candidates, including the current assistant secretary, who under this bill would not qualify for his own job.
Lawmakers also approved a change from Miami Republican Senator Miguel Diaz de la Portilla, putting in place certification requirements for all child welfare workers. That would include the newly hired social workers under the bill. Sobel appeared resistant to the idea at first, but Diaz de la Portilla later swayed her.
It's an additional level of training and protection. You get a social work degree, you know, today, you know, it's a good idea that every year you continue to grow your knowledge base, that every year you have to recertify that you're adhering to a code of ethics. It allows you something that you can pull in case somebody who may be very well qualified and well intentioned today, somewhere down the line, cannot meet certification requirements because of a course of conduct that he or she chose to engage in.
There is also another bill that seeks to make sure non-relatives can be compensated for taking in foster kids. Currently, that's only done for relatives. The bill also directs DCF to make sure siblings are kept together when they go into the state's foster care system. Miranda Phillips, a former foster kid and a member of foster care advocacy group, 40 Youth Shine, says it would have helped her.
I came into foster care when I was 12. My brother was 9. I aged out at 18. Me and my brother were separated shortly after being put in care. I went to an all-girls group home, and he went to a foster home. In the beginning, we had visits, but they started to get canceled or rescheduled. We had one birthday together and no holidays. Me and my brother's relationship started to fade because of the lack of communication.
It also directs the department to conduct a probe immediately following any child deaths to make sure the units known as critical incident rapid response teams identify the root cause and determine if a policy change is needed. The Senate panel is still looking into concerns about community-based care agencies or CBCs that work with DCF to help provide child welfare services. The measure creates a group made up of community volunteers that will make recommendations to the CBCs, and retired Ocala physician Mike Jordan called that intrusive. His group, the Marion County Children Alliance, works closely with CBCs.
We really are just introducing another layer of oversight. We have DCF, which is the governmental layer, who's responsible at least indirectly to you all. And we also have the community board of our CBC, Kids Central. And I can tell you, these are community leaders. These are people who want to be on the board. I see this level that you're suggesting as being intrusive, frankly.
In addition to those bills, the Senate Children, Families, and Elder Affairs Committee unanimously agreed to move another bill forward that directs DCF to work with the State Health Department and the Agency for Healthcare Administration to provide care for children who need persistent medical attention. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
It's not only the welfare of children that has been in the media and political spotlight of late. In recent years, a lot of people have been paying attention to the state of Florida's assisted living facilities for the state's seniors. Now a plan revamping regulations for those facilities is heading for final votes in the House and Senate. The proposals come nearly 3 years after a series of media reports alleged abuse and neglect in some of those homes. Now, as Lynn Hatter reports, the industry and lawmakers have really reached a deal.
Every time Terry Russell sees a headline about abuse or neglect in a Florida assisted living facility, he cringes.
I know that I put forth the effort to take care of my residents as well as I can and try to make their life as productive as it can be at this time of their life. So, yeah, when I see articles about other facilities or other folks that are having problems, and it tarnishes the reputation of all of us.
Russell owns and operates 5 nursing homes and assisted living facilities in Florida. Problems in the state's assisted living facilities, or ALFs, and lack state oversight of them came to a head 2 years ago when the Miami Herald published a series of articles detailing fraud, abuse, and neglect of residents in several South Florida homes. Since then, the state has tried and failed to pass legislation addressing the issue. The effort has been repeatedly tanked by the ALF industry and House Republicans, who tend to resist increasing regulation.
The ALF reform was not a priority, and other issues took precedence.
That's Hollywood Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel, who has been pushing an assisted living reform bill for the past 2 years. Her proposal is now before the full House and Senate. The bills are a compromise between the assisted living industry and lawmakers. The ALFs have accepted increased regulation and monitoring in exchange for more certainty concerning fines and penalties. Florida Healthcare Association Chief Lobbyist Bob Estalis says his organization is backing the bills for the first time.
We've got to put some certainty out there for the people who work in it. We've got to make sure that ACA has the resources to clean up problems that have been identified in the press. And we're working real hard with the bill sponsors, and our goal is to get that passed this year.
That it's about time sensibility resonates with ALF owner Terry Russell, who says while he's not a fan of regulation, especially when it likely means more paperwork, he believes it's worth it for his industry.
It definitely is an industry that has grown and going to grow, and fortunately or unfortunately, sometimes that creates where we have to develop systems to be able to monitor and make sure that folks are doing what they need to do.
The proposal before the House and Senate would establish a rating system for assisted living facilities and allow public comments to be made on the Agency for Healthcare Administration's website. In the 2 years since the Miami Herald's report on abusive facilities ran, ACA has boosted its own reporting and inspection standards, and the rate of problems in those facilities has dropped. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the nation is watching what might otherwise be an unremarkable congressional election in Southwest Florida.
A political scientist from the University of South Florida says this is, you know, a test case for the rest of the nation. And then you have the backlash to that story where they present all the reasons why it's not the case. And in fact, it's probably some of each.
Florida lawmakers are looking to streamline development permitting along the coast, but environmentalists say they hope officials won't move too fast. And studies suggest most Americans are waiting longer than ever to get married. Now some members of the Florida legislature would like to see even fewer young couples tie the knot.
Support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment.
By now, you may have noticed how a certain Florida congressional election, which was taking place today, has gotten so much national attention. Florida Public Radio's Stan Jastrzebski talked earlier with John O'Connor from member station WUSF in Tampa to get his take on the race between Democrat Alex Sink and Republican David Jolly.
John, let me ask first, what has the atmosphere been like today?
Well, it's really been unusual. It's a special election, and they're kind of different animals. And so it's been really quiet at the polling places. A lot of folks expect that you're going to see more ballots cast, absentee or, mailbox mailed in than actually cast at the ballot box. So the polling places this morning were very quiet. One of the polling places I went to in downtown St. Pete had no voters while I was there. Some of my colleagues were at some of the polling places in the northern part of the district and heard and saw the same things. So it's been slow turnout so far this morning. No reported problems.
Anything you can attribute that to? Because it seems like this is an election, albeit a special election, that has gotten a fair amount of press.
Yeah, it seems mainly due just to the fact that it is a special election, and those types of elections where you're coming out on a day where you're not typically conditioned to vote, particularly for a congressional race. And so those voters tend to be diehards, the kinds of people that always come out to vote for either Democrats or Republicans or independents who always tend to vote in elections. And so there just aren't as many of those people as there are the kinds of people who show for a governor's race or for a presidential race because of other things happening and the race is at the top of the ticket.
It's interesting you mentioned that this was a race that could be decided in some part by absentee ballots. That's actually been a subject of some discussion up here during the legislative session. Jack Latvala was talking the other day about the potential for absentee ballot fraud and how he had had a number of conversations with the Pinellas County Clerk over their differing feelings about absentee ballots. What causes that to be the case there?
Well, it is an older population in that district, so those voters tend to vote absentee more often. You also have concerted get-out-the-vote efforts targeted towards absentee voting. We had Jeb Bush attached to some mailers urging people to remember to send in their votes. So I think it's part of the strategy. I mean, the Republicans really do like to turn out absentee voters, get those votes in the ballot box before Election Day. And it seems to be working. We had 125,000 votes cast when we got up this morning. And they're expecting, we only had 216,000 votes in all of 2010 in the district. And so they're expecting a turnout, probably less than 200,000 total. So 125,000 of that is absentee.
What do you make of the people who have gone even on national media today and said this could be some sort of a harbinger either for the way the gubernatorial election is going to pan out or the way the congressional elections are going to pan out in November? Is there any reason? Have you talked to anybody who said conclusively to you or given you some reason to believe, yes, this particular special election could in fact be special in its predictive power?
I like stories like this because, that's the early line. You'll have somebody like Susan McManus from USF, a political scientist from the University of South Florida, who says this is, a test case for the rest of the nation. And then you have the backlash to that story where they present all the reasons why it's not the case. And in fact, it's probably some of each. You're definitely going to see some messages tested out here. We've had a ton of advertising on the air in mailers. And so folks are going to take some lessons from that for sure to see what works and what doesn't work. On the other hand, it is a special election, and so you can have all these outside groups that would play in a race where if this race were November, maybe they wouldn't be as involved or spending as much money as they are. And so that does change the dynamic.
Remind people who aren't there in Southwest Florida with you, what's the district like?
The district stretches, first of all, and this is an important fact, it's contained entirely within Pinellas County. and was drawn that way so that certain Democratic parts of neighboring Hillsborough County were not included in the district. So it is somewhat unusual in that it is all contained within the district. Generally, it's an older district than a lot of the neighboring districts around it, older in terms of the average age of the voters. It is a district that has consistently voted Republican, particularly for this seat. Bill Young held it for a long, long time. And in the last couple of presidential races, George Bush easily won election there, easily won re-election there. And then in 2008, that margin started to be cut. John McCain only managed about half as large a margin as Bush did the 4 years prior. And then in the most recent election, Barack Obama actually won the district. So it is definitely trending bluer. It is also trending, there's a kind of growing immigrant population in the district. That may be one reason why that's happening. And it's also, we're seeing the district grow a little younger as well.
So let's get to the big question here at the end. Is there any way to forecast who's going to win this race? I was talking with a congressional aide yesterday or a legislative aide here in Tallahassee yesterday who said, well, Alex Sink is a terrible campaigner, and David Jolly is nothing if not a Washington lobbyist, and that turns people off. He painted it as the lesser of two candidates nobody in their right mind should vote for. Is there anyone down there who's able to give you any sort of a forecast of how this might turn out?
Well, everyone has an opinion, but I think most of the opinions you hear are essentially, I don't really know, but I think it's going to go this way or that way. Generally, everybody agrees this is going to be a very close race. It's not going to be a blowout. David Jolly entered the day – well, I'd say David Jolly. Republicans entered the day in terms of absentee ballots cast with about a 5,000-vote advantage. The conventional wisdom is that Democrats have a turnout advantage on election day because of the network Barack Obama has built up here. So all that is to give you a non-answer and say, I couldn't predict. It's going to be close. And the one dynamic you mentioned there that is interesting that may have some relevance to the fall is the idea that neither one of these candidates is a perfect candidate, because we're going to see that kind of repeated in the fall in the governor's race as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in this race and if it carries over to the governor's race.
John O'Connor is a reporter at WUSF in Tampa and has been following the special election to replace the late Congressman Bill Young. John, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
In Florida, it's almost impossible to overemphasize the importance of water. The state is bounded on three sides by more than 1,100 miles of coastline. Much of the state sits atop one of the largest freshwater aquifers in America. And already there are parts of the state where water shortages appear imminent. Lawmakers in the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee are floating a raft of water-related legislation, and we get more on that from Regan McCarthy.
In its first 2 weeks, this legislative session has adopted a decidedly environmental slant, especially when it comes to water issues. Florida Governor Rick Scott started early with announcements he'd be asking for increased water cleanup spending, and he continued the theme through his State of the State speech when he claimed he's invested record funding in protecting the state's environment, a claim PolitiFact has since rated false. Nonetheless, the floodgates have been opened, and a quick search shows more than 200 water-related bills are spilling through. Pontevedra Republican Representative Doc Renuart is sponsoring one such measure. He says it streamlines the permitting process for improvements on existing properties along Florida's coastline.
Second part of this bill pertains to coastal aquatic management areas around the state, and this would allow them the same ability as state parks to have vendors such as kayak rental boats, and snack bars, which would allow for additional revenue for the reserves to use for preservation.
Audubon, Florida Legislative Director Mary Jean Yon says while the bill has been improved since it was first proposed, she's still got some reservations with the plan to speed up permits.
We really believe that there needs to be language that creates a nexus with FWC and to make sure that when these uses are approved, that there is not a threat of harm for federal or state-listed threatened or endangered species.
The Sierra Club of Florida is also raising concerns with the measure. Meanwhile, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection supports it. Lawmakers also took up a measure that would let county officials hold a referendum vote to direct up to a 1% sales tax to water cleanup projects. Florida Stormwater Association Executive Director Kurt Spitzer says municipalities already have the option of levying such a tax for projects like encouraging businesses and homeowners to make energy-efficient upgrades.
This bill is not a new tax, it's just a new use of an existing tax, and water quality improvement is not just an environmental issue or a permit compliance issue, it's an economic development issue, and this lets county governments put this question in front of their electorate to make that decision.
Bill sponsor and Titusville Republican Representative Tom Goodson says the measure would be especially helpful for areas such as the Indian River Lagoon. It's suffering from water quality issues that have left the once clear water looking more like murky green sludge. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Now here's Ronald J. Eben with a look ahead to tomorrow's action at the Florida Capitol.
A bill that would hold down tuition at Florida universities will be debated before the Senate Education Appropriations Committee at 9 Wednesday morning. The bill would eliminate inflation-based tuition increases and also reduce what are known as differential tuition increases that could be as high as 15%. The subcommittee will also consider a bill requiring school districts adopt a digital classrooms plan. Jesse Panuccio, the executive director of the State Department of Economic Opportunity, will be up for confirmation before a Senate committee Wednesday morning. Panuccio and his department have come under heavy criticism because of months of problems with the new unemployment compensation computer system. The hearing set for 9 on Wednesday morning before the Senate Transportation, Tourism, and Economic Appropriations Subcommittee. The Senate Rules Committee meets at 4 p.m. Wednesday and will consider several bills, including a proposal filed by Senator Geraldine Thompson, Democrat of Orlando, that would make clear discrimination is prohibited against pregnant women in such issues as employment. Florida House convenes at 3:30 Wednesday afternoon. The House expected to vote on a package of bills to toughen laws against sexual predators and offenders, and also a bill to create a new state technology agency. The House K-12 Committee will take up several bills regarding school safety prompted by the tragic school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. One requires school boards to formulate policies and procedures for dealing with active shooters and hostage situations. And those are some of the items on the legislative agenda for Wednesday, March 12th. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally, tonight, recent studies show Americans are waiting longer than ever to get married. That even though most states, including Florida, allow individuals as young as 16 to get hitched. Now, as Ryan Bank reports, a few Florida lawmakers want to further restrict the possibility of minor marriage.
According to U.S. Census data, American men and women are waiting on average 4 years longer to get married than ever before. But most marriage experts, like Tallahassee counselor and sex therapist Linda Humphreys, say that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, this is my office, and this is where I meet my patients. Okay, and so over there, of course, I do.
Humphreys has been a therapist for more than 3 decades and worked in a number of states before settling down in her office on the northeast side of Tallahassee. She maintains that most couples, young and old, deal with the same issues. Younger couples are just less equipped to navigate the pressures of married life.
The younger the person is, the less life experience they have, and so the less prepared they are to deal with things. People who've been around each other and just have been alive longer have more resources. They understand where they can go to get help and that kind of thing.
Humphrey says her clients range in age from their early 20s to as old as 70. She's never counseled a married couple under the age of 18, but that doesn't mean there aren't any in Florida. The state's marriage laws allow minors who are at least 16 years old to tie the knot under certain circumstances. Christy Meichler is a supervisor in the Leon County Clerk's office. She explained those special circumstances in a phone interview Tuesday.
They have to have proof of either, being
pregnant or a consent form. And at that point, if they have those, then we, if they have the consent form that's required by Florida statute from, you know, the parentals, then we would issue the license.
Meichler says without those forms, a young couple could still get a license by appealing to the right judge. But that might change if a bill filed by Tampa Democratic Senator Arthenia Joyner becomes law. The bill would strip magistrates of some of their judicial discretion. It would also make it impossible for couples under the age of 18 to marry without providing consent forms or proof of pregnancy. So, how many potential couples might that change affect? Not many, according to the Wakulla County Clerk of Court, Brett Thurmond. He says such unions amount to less than 1% of all marriages in the county every year.
Well, statistically, I think we average a little bit over one a year. This is my 18th year here, and so some years we might have a couple, but most years it's either none or one. We're a fairly small county.
However, even slightly larger counties have similar percentages. In Leon County, clerk's office employee Cindy Meichler says since 2011, only four such marriage licenses have been issued. Those numbers lead marriage experts like Linda Humphreys to believe the bill is a solution looking for a problem. Humphreys says she'd like to see the state focus on educating young people about sex and relationships, rather than spend time worrying about clarifying marriage statutes that relate to minors.
The studies have shown that, generally speaking, the more educated the person is, the less quick they are to hurry towards marriage. And this is true in the general population as well as with the very young.
Humphrey says because most of these young marriages stem from an accidental pregnancy, better sex education in schools could help prevent the need for minor marriage altogether. Joyner and the bill's House sponsor, Opa-locka Democratic Representative Cynthia Stafford, did not return calls for comment. Both bills have yet to be heard in committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Bank.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Evan, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzewski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.